Welcome to the Cleveland Public Library's Sports Research Center and our conversation with iconic high school football coach Ted Ginn Sr. After two decades as an assistant coach, many of them as an unpaid volunteer at Glenville, Ted became the head coach in 1997 and quickly turned Glenville High School into a national story. Glenville won every Senate football championship since Ted took over. He also guided the Tar Blooders into the state playoffs 11 times in 12 years. Glenville was the state runner-up in 2009. 50 of his former players earned full college scholarships. One of his players, Troy Smith, won the Heisman Trophy at Ohio State. He also coached the Glenville track team to five straight state championships. This conversation was recorded on April 9th, 2013, shortly after Ted returned to work after a lengthy hospitalization for treatment of pancreatic cancer, which kept him on the sidelines during the 2012 season. He vowed to come back in 2013, and he did, putting together another powerful Glenville team. The Cleveland Public Library welcomes Ted Ginn Sr. Well, here in the spring of 2013, we're talking to Ted Ginn, head football coach, Glenville High School, and really during his academic days, you're at Ginn Academy. It's almost like a private school that was started, carries your name, and you work there. Let's bring your statistical record up to date. You became the head coach in 1969. 97. You became the head coach of Glenville in 1997. Mm-hmm. In all those years, you have a record of 137 wins, only 24 losses. You have won every Senate championship beginning in your second year there. Mm-hmm. You've been in the playoffs 11 of 13 years, an incredible record. And you were the runner-up in the state 1 year. Now, let us begin with what brought you to Cleveland?
Well, what brought me to Cleveland was my parents was divorced. I was staying in Louisiana with my grandmother and grandfather.
Is that where you were born, Louisiana?
Yeah, I was born in Bogalusa, Louisiana.
Bogalusa?
Yes. And I stayed in a little town called Frankerton in Louisiana. And I was doing segregation all that time, you know. And my mother and father fought for custody. And my mother won, and I end up in Cleveland in 1966. Coming out of the cotton fields.
Right out of the cotton fields.
Right out of the cotton fields, yes.
And you were 11 years old.
Yes.
And you settled, your mother was living in the Glenville neighborhood?
Yes, we was in the Glenville neighborhood the whole time.
And so you wind up going to Glenville High School?
Yes.
Played football there?
Yes, played football, graduated, left Glenville, got my first job through Glenville. I worked at Warner Swayze. I was in machine shop class in the basement at Glenville High School. So everything I do in my life is at Glenville, and I'm 57, and I'm still working at Glenville.
Now, were you a great football player, a good football player? Were you recruited by any colleges?
I was a great football player.
Now we return to the truth.
No, I wasn't recruited.
You played.
I played, and I started with the great Terry Jones. I was the center for Terry Jones.
Terry Jones was a great quarterback.
Yes.
Went to Indiana. Also yes. a great baseball pitcher.
That's right. You know, I didn't have a position. And the players, Terry and all those guys, Fuqua, all them, I played on JV my 10th grade year. And my junior year, I wanted to play varsity. So they said, what position you gonna play? I said, what position is open? You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna play center. I was 143 pounds.
Really?
And they laughed at me, but by the time we put that equipment on, I was all over the people. I beat a senior. I was a senior. If you remember back in 73, The first game used to be on Channel 25.
Sure.
I was the center. We played East Tech. We opened up with East Tech. And I was 143 pounds, the lightest, the littlest guy in the center. But I was tough. And I played linebacker. But center was my position. Number 64.
And have they retired your number?
Oh, no. But I do pick and choose who I'm going to give my number really? To. I said, this is the greatest number on the team, right? 64.
So you begin coaching there at Glenville while you're working at Warner and Swayze. Is that correct?
That's right. And how I started to coach at Glenville, my mother died. I graduated in 74. My mother died in 76. And the head coach at the time was James Hubbard, which was a position coach when I was a senior in high school. Bob Hole was the head coach.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. And the year I graduated, the next year, 1975, I think, Mr. Hubbard became the head coach. Mm-hmm. So when my mother died in 76, he got in contact with me and made me come down to Glenville because I was the only child and it was just me and my mother, and he wanted to make sure that I didn't go astray. I was staying in the house by myself. You know, back then, who gonna rent a house to a 19-year-old today? And just show you how times change. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I stayed upstairs over some people downstairs with Miss Flint, so the community and the street took care of me. You know what I'm saying? Because a 19-year-old just lost his mother. Mm-hmm. They didn't throw me away. You know what I'm saying? But the street and the community took care of me. And Mr. Hubbard, which was the head coach, made me come down. And I didn't know what he was talking about, what he was doing. I didn't want to coach. Mm-hmm. I was working in Warner Swayze, trying to live, scared to be hungry, you know. Scared that I'm going to not have a place to stay. You know, they're scared that people wouldn't allow me to stay in the house and all that kind of stuff, but those people embraced me. But Coach Hubbard had me. They said, come down here, boy. Said, you know, I want you to stick around here. I want you to just come here every day when you get off work. So I go down. He said, teach that boy how to snap the ball like you used to do it. That's how he started me. He said, go over there and clean that bathroom out and make sure the equipment and the water and stuff is out, you know. But I didn't know what he was talking about, you know. But that was his way of saving my life. You know, and started me out. And I've been at Glenville ever since 1976. But I coached from 76 to 86 for free.
You did?
I didn't get hired as an assistant to 86. You know, and from 86 to 97, I became the head coach in 97.
Yes. So then in 86, when did you work full-time in the hallways of Glenville as the security guard?
I got laid off in 89, or, yeah, I got laid off in 89 or 90. Yeah, 89, I started in 91. I went in business for myself from 89 to 91. And then Mr. Kohut told me, said, you tired of working in this store? I had went and bought a beverage store. I wouldn't go back to the factory because I didn't feel what I was doing in the factory was, it didn't please me. You know what I'm saying? I'm working with metal and working, and then, you know, what I liked it was dealing with young people and trying to influence them and teaching them different.
So you had found your calling along this way.
Yes, I did. And I kind of made it my ministry. And I didn't want kids to live like I had to live. And I found that I could influence people and give them an opportunity to be great. And so Mr. Core said, here, I'm gonna get you a job in the city, in the school system. So he sent me downtown at the security office. And back then, you know, you could get a job. And it's just based off somebody's name. You know, I was a good kid. Mm-hmm. And these are the examples that I try to tell young people today. People don't know nothing about you but how you was as a child. So when you in school today and you dealing with what you're doing, mm-hmm. that's your resume. And you don't know where teachers and coaches and all these people are going to be by the time you get older. So just how I was as a child gave me a job. So I became the security officer at Glenville. And that's when I first got my job.
But you say that you didn't want to coach when you were 19 years old, but now you wanted to coach.
Yeah.
And you wanted to be a head coach.
No, I never wanted to be a head coach.
You didn't?
No. I did never want to be a head coach. It was forced on me. Everything, head track coach, football coach, was forced on me.
Really?
Never, you got to be a good assistant. I was a great assistant. You know what I'm saying? But they forced that on me because of the influence and the direction that I could take young people.
Well, you had mentioned once that you applied for the head job at Collinwood.
Mm-hmm. That's because Bob Fisher. Remember Bob old
sure.
man Fisher?
Sure.
When he retired, he suggested I didn't go ask him.
Really?
He suggested that if y'all want a great coach, better get that boy down at Glendale.
Wow.
That's how I ended up interviewing for the job.
And so you went in and interviewed for the job.
Yeah. But when I went in to interview for the job, once again, those people sit there and say, you're not a certified teacher, you'll never get a job here. This is the guys as I walked through the door that wasn't on the interview team. You know, and that's how I was treated. Yeah. You didn't have a chance to be a head coach if you wasn't a certified teacher. Everybody don't go the same route, you know.
So how did you become the head coach? How did they force it on you at Glenville?
Well, they forced track and football.
Yes.
When Coach Hubbard retired, and I tried to beg him to stay, he retired, and time went along, and the principal was Mr. Houghton, was the principal. And he had certain expectations that he had for Glenville football and the Glenville sports. You know, he wanted championships, he wanted kids going to college, and he wanted all that. But that was always my dream, but I wasn't a head coach. You know, I was just doing whatever I was told to do. When Hub retired, they didn't find a coach, didn't nobody apply.
Really?
No, because once again, I never stopped working because I wanted to make sure that the program continued to go as it was when Coach Hub was there. And I was in the meantime still begging him to come back. And I said, I'll do the work. But you know, he felt it was time for him to step down. And nobody never applied. And so it was getting late in the summer, and it was just me and Matt out there.
And Coach Matt Chinchar.
Chinchar out there and Coach Hurd. Well, nobody, a coach, anything but me. I was the only assistant, and Coach Hurd was the only assistant left. The other assistants, we would call them, and they would never respond. They had been coaching there with Hub for many years. And I would continue to keep the program going. So everybody felt that, you know, they're going to get this job again. So in the meantime, all the people that was there that was working with Hub, I felt that they knew me. I knew them, the academic people that was helping and the film people and everybody, and that had film equipment and all this kind of stuff. So it was late, so Mr. Harden called me and said, you're going to be the head football coach. I said, I am. How that's going to happen? He said, I'm going to interview you, and I'm going to get the AD in here and somebody else. And they interviewed me because it was late. You couldn't get a coach. I've been with the kid. So when they interviewed me, he signed off, said, I'm the head football coach. He said, and then he said, I'll fight the grievances.
So the union filed a grievance.
Well, other people go to the union, they filed a grievance and said they want a job, but the job was posted. Nobody applied because they already, I don't know why. So when I go into the season, I become the head coach, and not wanting to be the head coach, And I end up being head coach, and a lot of things went down, you know.
Yes.
Grievances, a lot of racial talk.
Uh-huh. You were resented because you were not a member of the teachers' union. Yeah,
that's right. And, you know, and they would come and they would say all kind of stuff like, he don't know what he's doing, he's going to mess up everything. Mm-hmm. But in the same token, I didn't feel nobody else knew what they was doing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But I was always humble and respectful to them. But they would break the windows out of my house.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
They broke windows in your house?
Yeah, a big boulder in my...
Really?
In, through my patio door. And all those type of things happened to me. They would shoot paintballs at my house.
Really?
Yeah. Break the windows out of my van. That kind of stuff, man. It was bad.
And how about the opposing coaches? You'd beat them on Friday afternoons, and how did they treat you?
Sometimes I would walk across the field, they wouldn't shake my hand.
Really?
Yeah. And they would say little stuff to me that would try to throw you off, you know, to make you lose your skull. And I went through that, bro. You know, it was just...
But how long did that go on?
That went on for probably 3 years.
Really?
Yeah. Then, you know, when I started winning, then more kids would stay in the Senate and not go to your private school. Then they started saying I was cheating.
Oh.
You know, and you know, I done went through it all, man. I look at it and, you know, you remember when you're playing those powerhouses, not Sanism, but just certain schools and that I used to play. And the first time, now when they beat you 45 to nothing and all that stuff, I remember all those.
Really?
I remember, Ken McKinley.
Don't I?
They had the best team in the nation.
Yes.
They beat me 72 nothing.
Did they?
What was the head coach?
Tom McDaniels.
Tom McDaniels. Uh-huh. I never get his son was the quarterback.
Yeah.
And he had Martin and all those guys.
Yes.
Man. Some guy was blitzing me in the fourth quarter. They're killing me, man. You know, the backups and everybody. They still had the guys in there. I'll never forget that. But it taught me something. You know what I'm saying? It taught me a lot of things. I studied my children. I studied my program. But I already knew that we was just as good as them. But
it taught you. What did it teach you?
It taught me that my kids was undernourished, not strong, you understand, and lack of belief because of the stigma that has been in the city for a long time, even when I was in school. You understand, when they talked about the Bennies and the St. Ignatius, and, you know, everybody was scared of Benedictine in the Senate. You knew that was an automatic loss.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But I didn't see the greatness in them that no different than what we had, you know? So when I became the head coach, I always talked about greatness, and I always talk about winning against all odds.
You had no weight training at that time,
no,
did you?
No, we didn't spend that kind of time, you know, and I went through that now. Even if, I don't know if you remember, I started the speed and strength. You remember speed and strength was a private weight area, and they were saying that this is how Glenville kids get faster and stuff like that, and a lot of coaches resented that. Back then, you said, we have our own weight program in our own schools. We don't do everybody. You understand? And then now, everybody in the country, everybody in the city is going to private places because now we winning. But I had to win. And they said, look at his system. You know what I'm saying? It's something that he's doing different than us. Yeah, you can have your own weight program, but every kid would like to be personally touched. That's a mental thing, too, now. You know what I'm saying? For a kid, you know, you have your team concept, but you also got to think a kid want to be individually, have his own individual attention. So I figured that out. So I would say, tell your mother to put you over there speed and strength so that you can feel like you have your private club.
Well, Speed and Strength was a private firm?
I
see.
And kids, you know, back then...
Now that costs money to enroll them. Now, where'd you get the money to sign them up?
Well, a lot of kids that could do it, you understand it, but I used to get discounts. I had a Glenville discount.
Oh.
So I used to go and I'd have every, and this was back in the day, the guy, I was helping him build his area, so I would pay $10 a kid, you know what I'm saying? And if I can bring more kids, he would let me get away with $10 or $5. But I might bring 40 kids on Wednesday. You understand? And then once we, and it was like a Glenville night. And that's how I would pay for some of them. And then, you know, some of the parents, we'll find somebody to sponsor a kid so they can get two or three sessions a week. You know, so, but I started like that. And now I look around, everybody got a private trainer, everybody doing all that stuff now. You understand? Because I had to make it happen first before people believe. So, and then when I used to be playing Miller and all them guys, oh, we done got our own. I look around, they got their half of their kid out there now. Really? You know, so they go buy, give them, buy them a guy and put in their weight room. Say, we want some personal stuff here. You know what I'm saying? Because it's all about a win and a loss. But see, it wasn't about a win and loss for me. It's about keeping a kid engaged. You know, you got to win, but it's a lot of work to winning for me. You know, I look at it, I've got to take up the whole day. Because if I don't, they're going to get into something at night and I'm not going to have them anyway.
I've always wondered how you kept your kids interested all season when you became good. You dominated the Senate. Not only did you dominate the wins and losses, you dominated the scores. Mm-hmm. It was, you would be ahead 40-0 at halftime. Mm-hmm. So I made the remark, I don't know how true you'll think it is, but said that when you were playing some schools in the Senate, and this was worse than a bad practice.
Yeah.
You'd get on top of them so bad. You were scoring like every time you got the ball in one
play.
They
wouldn't even tackle me.
How did you keep these kids interested all season?
What I do is my practice. Ones against ones in practice was probably better than my game. And we always stayed focused on the playoffs because that's a whole new season. I never really concerned myself. I hate embarrassing teams, especially in the Senate, but I couldn't keep it off of them.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I used to do things like snap the ball and go to a knee in the second quarter. Mm-hmm. Some people would respect it, some people would get mad at me. You know what I'm saying? But I just can't see beating a team 100-0. 50 points is enough. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes I get 60 and it'll kill me. Mm-hmm. It'll kill me, man. I just, because that's somebody's child over there. You know, and you know, I'm not arrogant like that, you know. So, you know, it's so many things, man, that I could tell you. You know, and just even when you start winning, you know, you always kidding about, nah, I take the kids back from the private school back to the city, right? But I think about all that kind of stuff, man, and I think about when I was getting beat by the downstate teams, and this is one school in particular here. You know, they put in the paper, you know, the first year, well, this is how it went. The first year, you look like you're getting close to beating them and be a good game, so you're doing a great job with those kids over there. See, and that was sticking my head. The next time we go over there, I might beat them. Oh, you got lucky this time. Had a great team this year. Great job. The third time I beat them, yo, he's cheating. The fourth time I beat them, they're not really being coached. They just got a lot of speed, and they be out of position, and they make the tackles. It always was something. Like my kids wasn't coached. You don't win football games if you're not on the highest level that I've won in the city and not coach your kids.
Well, now, in your early years, I would notice on the sidelines, there were like three of you. You, Chinchar, later on Overton signed on.
Yeah.
But as the years went on, suddenly, about three, four years ago, suddenly your sidelines were crowded with coaches,
yes, sir.
Volunteer assistant coaches. They all hopped on the bandwagon.
I hopped on the bandwagon.
I don't know how, if any of these guys knew how to coach.
No, they just wanted to wear the G. But let me explain something.
They wanted to wear the G.
Yeah, and then they want to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. Everybody that you see on the side, not really a coach. It's people that are about the purpose and about the calling. Mm-hmm. Some people they're just for that, you know. And that's what I need, you know, for to help keep the kids in line. Everybody's not there just to be a coach. They're there to help save some lives. But that is an issue for me too. Because now they have the Senate rule that you can only have 5 coaches.
Oh.
Oh, man, they turn me in all the time about that. See, I'm still going through that today. Because that don't determine that me winning a game. I got 100 kids, and you got 30. And we get paid the same money. I can't control the 100 kids with 5 guys. You know what I'm saying? So I, in the Senate, I have that issue.
No.
You know, so I have to come up with who these people are. They have to be certified. They have to go do what just like what a regular coach do. And I can't call them volunteers because there's no volunteer coaches in the Senate.
Oh,
so
union rules.
Once again,
yeah. He nods his head. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You understand? But. I have to say, so you tell me that I can't have a stat person, I can't have a get-back coach. A get-back coach is something that's legit.
Get-back coach means get away from the sidelines.
That's a real coach. That's the most important coach on game day.
Really?
A get-back coach, watch the NFL. They got a get-back coach, okay? I can't have a trainer, I can't have a stat person, I can't have none of that stuff. You don't run a football program like that. You know? You got 100 kids, you got 80 kids dressed. Come on now. So, it never changes. It never stops.
You're a Cleveland All-Star team. All the good players gravitate to you.
I don't say that. I got the kids in my community. I might have one or two kids that might come in my area. But they live there. They find a way to get there. But I miss more kids than I. If I tell you how many kids that I should have, it'll blow your mind. Because I still lose a lot of kids because people hate winners. You know, they hate success. People are tired of Glenville.
Well, I say that as it's a sign of, it's a compliment that players gravitate to you because they want to play for the best. Or what? You're the New York Yankees of the Senate.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that because I don't have no money to pay them.
Yeah.
I got a lot of promises. I got a lot of love. I got a lot of passion for them. So that equals out to money. So I would say that. Yeah, I do have that. You know, kids want to be loved and hugged, you know, and they want to have some expectation in their life, and they want to be in a system that got a chance.
Well, also, they know that if they come to Glenville, they're going to get scouted.
Oh, they're going to get scouted.
Now, this started with you and a van.
Mm-hmm.
Remember in the middle of the summer, 12 years ago or so, how far back?
You 90, I did a little bit in the 80s.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Now, you would pack up, you started packing up 8 or 10 of your kids and have crowded in a van.
Yep.
And you took them off for 10 days, 2 weeks to colleges. You visited from Michigan to Louisiana.
That's right.
To show off these kids, let them work out for these college coaches.
Yep. Because I had to break that stigma. I had to break that barrier of the understanding of kids in the city. Now, what
but big-time colleges would not recruit the inner-city Cleveland.
No.
Because they didn't think they were good enough.
Yeah. I can't see no other reason.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I had to prove it. Mm-hmm. So I prepared, you like rear around to go in June to showcase my kids, and they gonna showcase. They say when they get there, they gonna take all the reps. They gonna jump in front of the line. They gonna be ready for everything that you ask. And
now, were these colleges were putting on camps at that time?
June, all of your colleges, all your major colleges have camps. So, and when you go to the camps, you go to Ohio State. You got college, you got all your Mac schools, you got everybody. You understand? When the bus roll in, everybody, all them little campers is there. When Glenville bus run in, they just want to drop their whistles and go this way.
Yeah.
So the bus is here because it's going to be some.
Well, late, it started with a van, then it became a bus. And you'd have 40, you'd have a full bus.
Yeah.
What, 40, 50 kids on a bus?
Yeah.
Not all your kids from other schools then.
No. And the purpose, well, when I started in the van, I was almost like telling them. Say, man, I'm gonna be there at this time. I'm traveling. I just give me 40 minutes of your time with your staff. And I got four or five, six kids on the van, and we wanna compete.
So you would contact the colleges in advance?
Early. Oh, yeah.
We will arrive exactly when. Yeah. Take a look at us.
And people used to look at me and say, man, you crazy? The kids get out of the van. You talking about Dante Winter, T. again, Jr., Superman, and Dante Cloud, all them guys running sub 4.4s. Come on, you know them.
I covered them.
So that's amazing to people. But I can remember Don Beebe. Remember he played for Buffalo Bill, had that funny helmet that used to, big helmet in for Buffalo Bills. He timed Ted one day.
That's your son, Ted.
My son, at a 4.28, he didn't believe it.
4.28.
4.28.
Nobody runs a 4.28. Not on this planet.
Yeah. But Ted Ginn Jr. did. Dante and them run 4.3 flats, almost 4.2s. Superman, all them guys. And the kids didn't like it. But I became successful with that. And like I said, they got the Ted Ginn rule when I did with Pierre. I took him over 5,000 miles to all these different universities.
That's Pierre Woods you're speaking of.
Pierre Woods, that's right. And the NCAA came up with that rule that you can't offer kids scholarship in camps because of that guy at Ohio. I was in Sports Illustrated for that. But
so they would at that, and they would offer a kid right there. They'd see
right
a kid
there.
Right, they'd offer him.
Right there. But, you can't.
You're not allowed to offer now.
No, that's my rule now, because they said I was cheating.
But that sounds like a silly rule, because they can't offer them when they're at camp that day, but that night they can walk up to them at an Arby's and offer them, right?
On the corner. And say, you got a scholarship in that camp back there.
Can they really?
Yeah. Wait till you get home, I'll call your coach on the phone or something. Uh-huh. But also what really sticks in my mind, I was just about that camp tour again, camp tour thing, was when I became successful with my kids, I was always about the community of Cleveland, about the city of Cleveland. And I said, it's not fair. These other kids, I didn't care what school they went to, but I mainly started the bus tour to do for the inner city kids of Cleveland. So I would try to contact all the coaches. Oh no, I'm not gonna let my kid go. He just wanna recruit him. I said, well, you get on the bus and go yourself. Don't cost you nothing. Once we do what we do, you understand, you can promote your own kid. So I go get a bus, 55-pound bus, steal my kids.
Really?
I couldn't get no kids from no other school. They were scared to print the teeth. The coaches wouldn't allow them to go. So then I opened up to the whole state of Ohio. So I had coaches in Cincinnati.
Really?
I had coaches in Toledo, Dayton, and Cleveland, and that's how I got Dan Sines and Barker and all them guys. Them guys was on my bus too.
Really?
Dan Sines probably would never been to Ohio State, gonna be for me.
Really?
Yeah. All the kids that played in Cincinnati, all these kids got kids that I took out of some of the suburban areas here, like I think Avon Lake or something. I can't remember where that kid was from. Might have been from
the linebacker from Avon Lake.
It was a lineman, I can't think. Yeah, I can't remember. Okay. Anyway, that's the type of situation it turned into. All the kids outside of Cleveland started using again too. Mm-hmm. So we riding for 2 weeks. So now we become a family.
Mm-hmm.
All these kids, everybody on different color helmets.
Yeah.
And it was like being in the Army. You know, I ran it like that. We get on the bus. We don't get off the bus. You get off the bus with your helmet on. Really? People, kids sitting up on the bus, it's hot. Really? And they got their helmet on. And we line up and they're all different. They're the bus here. So when we get, when we travel and we go to all these major colleges, the GIN bus is here. Everybody ready to go.
Do you still run the GIN bus?
No, this got too expensive for myself.
Yeah.
You know, I might lose $7,000-$10,000 a year. And my wife got tired of that, you know what I'm saying? So, and I could never convince nobody to sponsor it. You're talking about a $40,000-$50,000 trip.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you're talking about hotel fees and camp fees, and I'll never forget this. I remember, I hate to call his name, man, Lloyd Carr called around and said, how this guy is taking these kids to all these camps, how are you paying for it? Is somebody's cheating?
Did you say the name Lloyd Carr?
Yeah.
wasn't he the Michigan coach?
Yes. So, because I would go to all the universities except Michigan.
Really?
Yeah, because he just couldn't see eye to eye. Huh.
And of course, that strengthened your relationship with Jim Tressel at Ohio State.
Yes, that's those type of barriers I went through because Lloyd Carr hung up the phone on my kids.
Did he
like that? And he didn't like me questioning him. I haven't been through it all, baby.
Boy. Do you have a good relationship with the Michigan people now?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, yes. Brady Holt is a good guy.
Uh-huh.
And he remembered those days.
Really?
So Brady know what it is.
So this has not been a smooth trip for you.
No.
A lot of obstacles in your way that other coaches didn't have.
Right. And it's still in my way today.
Really?
You know, because, you know, you always hear me say that the sport get in the way. It do. Because that's not really me. My job is saving lives and helping young people. And you know, everybody got to give back to their community. You know, everybody does it differently. This is what I've been in the community for 30-some years. I graduated there. I know it. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to give people, be the example for hope, for young people to be productive men. And it'll never end because only people can look at it is my qualifications and the sport, no matter what I do. But if we don't take advantage of somebody just in this community like myself, you know, I don't know if I live to see it, you know, because my whole dreams and goal is to have an inner city boarding school. That's what it all, that's how the school started.
Well, that's now we come to GIN Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, tell us what your dream is for GIN Academy.
My dream for GIN Academy was always for boarding speed. I got blueprints that I had for 10 years of the whole design and all that. And the boarding piece is to give a kid a chance. See, when you talk about boarding, when you think of people, wealthy folks that put their kid in boarding school, they put their kid in boarding school because they want them to have a quality of education. They want them to not to miss the core values of life while they're working on their career or whatever they're doing in their business. And they pay the money for that for their children. We need a boarding school in the inner city of Cleveland to have a chance to get a chance. You know what I'm saying? Because of the poverty of some of our kids, the homelessness, and all that kind of thing, and just the proper understanding on how the whole thing is being done. You don't have enough time to educate the kids in a school day. You know what I'm saying? And they're not surrounded by the type of environment that will give them the opportunity to achieve. So you need to put them in, lock them away every day. But every time I talk about it, this is what's getting me with education and educators at times. When you talk to people about money, or you talk in a room that you're asking for these type of things, and then you hear somebody tell you, Well, in order to change a behavior of anybody, you got to have them 28 consecutive days. That's what research said. I said, well, and then in my mind, I go, well, I understand that, but when am I going to ever have them for 28 consecutive days? And when I ask you, do we need to build a building here, or give me that land over there, or give me that building, and just attach a dorm to it so that we can be, I'm 95% graduation rate in the last 5 years at Ginn Academy. That's greatness. But we don't see it because it's not conventional.
For a Cleveland school, that's beyond belief.
That's unbelief. But that's greatness. But we don't put no resources to it. We don't do nothing. We're not retarded. You understand? I'm a football coach. And I got an opportunity to influence and to get greatness out of young people. Why not put resource to it? Why not say, let's get behind that? For real. You keep waiting for it to die. But I'm going to die before anybody get it. You know what I'm saying? You know, I don't understand that, Dan. I don't understand it, man. You know, I done did all the work.
Speaking of what's unbelievable, is you go from the security guard to the head of a private academy,
mm-hmm.
right? And the elite school in the city of Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that.
It's all about Jesus, man. It's all about the Lord, man. You can't beat somebody that's anointed. We're not that great, Dan. We're not that great of coaches. We're not that great of people. It's all about Jesus, man. If you don't have no spiritual base and nothing you're doing, you're not gonna achieve nothing. Period. So if you don't have that kind of thought and you don't teach that, it ain't gonna happen.
So you're teaching that in your school.
Yeah.
But you gotta be careful.
You can't say that too loud, in this
day and age.
Well, if you wanna fire me by the Lord, well, you might as well get ready, because I'm doing it. Because I already know that's the glue that holds everything together. Ain't no sense in me lying. It's all about the Lord, man. See, and why you keep going left when you know this is right? And then you give me an excuse. Come on, we are talking about humans. Talking about somebody's child. We ain't talking about the Ford Motor Company. We ain't talking about metal.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I understand that you have kids coming from all over Northeastern Ohio to Ginn Academy, not just the city of Cleveland.
Right. Yeah, because everybody wants something different. See, in order to be different, you got to have some courage. If you don't have courage, it takes courage to be different. You know, and some people was willing to travel on two buses, get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to come to my school.
Yeah.
Cause they want something different. You know, that's the motto at Ginn Academy. It takes courage to be different.
So some of these kids, this is not just a football academy. As I understand it.
It's not a football academy at all. That's what everybody wanted to be. But that's what it really should be. You know, like IMG take people, say this is a football academy, and they teach them everything from A to Z.
That's true.
If I can influence people, why can't be a football academy? Why can't be a sports school in all three different sports? Why can't be a vocational piece to it? I'm trying to help the world. I'm trying to help the community. I'm trying to help the state of Ohio. When it used to be, schools used to be a safe haven. You scared to go in them now. People shooting. What? You pick up on the signs. We can't even go to the movie. We can't do nothing where it used to be a safe haven. Because who doing the teaching? You understand? You have to have some parenting skills to be in education. Don't fool yourself. I'm on the front line. I'm not at a desk. I'm on the front line. You understand? And I'm the only one that can't quit. Everybody else can say, oh, Lord, this ain't for me. I can't go nowhere. I'm stuck. I'm in the mafia. Got all the information. Can't go nowhere. You'll find me at the bottom of Lake Erie.
Oh. Well, you have, among other things, you have also battled health issues recently.
Oh, no question.
A little touch of pancreatic cancer.
Yeah, a little touch.
You had a tough winter, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. But you got to fight. You got to dig. You got to have a purpose of living.
Do you think that that's what kept you alive when you were on life support this past winter?
That's exactly what kept me alive. Along with my family and the love of my family and what I do for a living and my church kept me alive. You can't be selfish, Dan, in this world and think you're going to live. If I was a selfish man, I'm a dead man. That don't make sense to you, but I'm being honest with you. If I'm selfish, I didn't even know how to pray for myself, man.
Really?
No, I had to ask somebody, man, how you pray for yourself? Because I thought that was selfish. I can pray for you. I can pray for everybody. I couldn't pray for myself because I didn't want God to understand that. I understand why you sending me through this. I got to be the example. You got to get the glory. I never knew I wouldn't live until I faced death. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just life, man. Life, you know, this is what I do. Easter meant so much to me, man. Mm-hmm. Not the Easter eggs. It's the purpose of why we're here. Somebody gonna give their life up for us. Mm-hmm. Now, I missed the birthday because I was in the hospital and I almost missed the celebration, which is Easter. But I was there and it meant so much, man, because I understand it now. I understand, but you gotta go through something in life, man, to really appreciate life. We take everything for granted, you know, cause we can get up, we can move, we can get in our cars, we can go to the refrigerator. But when you got to work on simple things of eating, using the bathroom, walking, breathing, get down.
You went through all that?
All that, man. I had everything you can even imagine, man.
Wow.
Going through that stuff, 105 fever, 104, 103 fever. Come on, man. Don't nobody live through that.
Well, you've been dealing with this for at least a couple of years, haven't you?
No. I never had that. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had some things going on for a few years, mm-hmm. but not that.
Oh.
Never had cancer like that, you know? I'm a miracle, bro. So you think you gonna make me doubt the man?
I'm not trying to make you doubt anybody.
You want me to say it's all about football? Look, I done won games spiritually. I remember I was playing St. Ed one time, man. And St. Ed was that year, he was real tough. I can't think of the year. But they was going in the end zone. And the ball just fell out of the dude's hand on the 2-yard line. And Curtis Smith covered it. I beat him back to back, St. Ed's and St. Ignatius. Oh. Didn't nobody tackle that dude. Oh. Ball just fell out of his hand. We covered it.
It's a miracle. That's the hand of God.
That's it. God knocked that ball out. Okay. But then the next year, the same thing happened to me. But let me tell you, and I tell the kids this. Because of how we practice and our arrogance of what we're doing, you can't be too arrogant as a coach and dealing with young people and make it all about killing. Mm-hmm. No. That year, St. Ed was real tough. Guy was, you know, they're going to win the state title. The next year, the same thing happened to me. My kids, I couldn't keep them calm in their mind or the focus. And you think it's all about the X and the O. My little back was running, freezing, getting ready to go in the end zone, ball fell out of his arm, right on 2-yard line, they covered it. We got beat. So you can't make me doubt the man. And we not that great of coaches, bruh. You know, I mean, I tell you, get in the way sometimes.
Well, let me get in the way again with football.
Go, come on with it.
You've got
yeah.
It. It has been said that more kids have gone to the Big Ten from Glenville High School than from any other school. Is that true?
In the country.
Is that of all time?
Of all time. In the last 10 years, I had 37 kids that played in the Big Ten in the last 10 years.
That's a remarkable number.
Yeah, out of one high school. But period. That's amazing. Out of an area that has no expectation, and they all against all odds. It's you know, we got it. We have it, man.
What will be the future of Glenville High School when you hang them up someday?
I'm scared to even think. See, because I don't want all the work I've done over the last 25, 30 years go to waste about the sport. I want the same integrity that I had for all these years, the respect, the community service, the spiritual base, the love and passion for kids. I don't care about the wins. You know, all the ingredients that goes into the win is what I care about. I'm afraid for that. That's the reason I probably die working. Because I just can't give it up like that. You know. Oh, you know.
One last thing about track. You also coached track at Glenville.
And started with girls.
You started with the girls' track team.
That's right. We had no expectation then. And the first year, I had a ninth grader won the state in the 400. A freshman in lane 7, current Kelly Turner. But back then, once again, they forced me to be the boys' coach behind the Donald Winston. And I'm finna tell you something else, you're gonna blow your mind. The principal at that time told me, sir, and I didn't want to be the track coach, but they said, you got to go and be the track coach to help LaDonna. So when the lady that had the girls track team quit, I said, I want to be the head girls track coach. That's the only time I ever asked to be a head coach, the only time. Went and sit in the office with the principal. I'm saying, I'll give you the job, but I'm going to, LaDonna's going to run it because she has a degree. You never went to school to be a coach in track. I said, but I can learn. I said, LaDonna can't run my track team. That's what happened to me. That year, the first year, they never went to the regionals. They never went to the state. I took the track team to the state, girls. And that coach, that's one principal, end up retiring, apologizing to me, and came and worked with me for about 5 or 6 years as my academic counselor. Because I told him, I said, you've been a principal for 30-something years. You didn't have a clue that all this was involved in the academic side of the athletes. He said, no. I said, can you imagine how many kids over the 30 years that you have had gave him a disservice? He said, yeah. See, it's the sport get in the way. You got what I'm saying? So the move on from that, then I became the football coach, and then I became the head track coach. And we hadn't won a state championship in track and field since 1975, 30 years. And then when I became the head coach, I won 5 in a row.
5 state track championships, including the Penn Relays.
Penn Relays, yeah.
Now, tell us about that, would you?
Well, you know, we and people really don't know. We were on national TV, and I remember everybody telling me, well, you know, Glenville High School won the Penn Relays in the 4x1.
One of the most famous track meets in the world.
In the world.
Outside of the Olympics, it's the Penn Relay.
That's right. You're absolutely right. Usain Bolt was on that Jamaican team.
You beat Usain Bolt's team?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. same boat with the anchor, that 4x1. We was in lane 9.
And you won it.
And won it all. And see, that's, we the only and the first African-American school and school in the city of Cleveland ever won a pin relay since the 1800s. The trophy I have it in my house. It's a big, big round, really? Like a big coin. All the kids got watches. And,
really?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice.
Wow.
Those are the type of things that is overlooked because we focus so much. And, you know, I hate to keep saying it, Dan, on the sport. And we done saved so many lives and gave so many people opportunity.
Let me make the suggestion that because of football, it gives you the podium, the opportunity to save those lives.
No question. Yeah, you're right. You know, I just think it getting in front of the business, you know. But I wouldn't have it no other way, you know. And I love Cleveland. I love Ohio. I love the Glenville area. I love the city of Cleveland, man. It's nothing like it across the country. I go to Texas and everywhere. Those people are very serious about their sport. And they put resources into it. And they expect greatness. And some of the kids right there just la 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 la. You know, when I go and look at the Menners and the Solons and their facilities, and I look at the city of Cleveland, and these, what makes the difference? Still children, still sports, still football. And you have an attitude of a poor inner city team that is trying to win lives. Come on, Dan.
And on that note, let's wrap it up. Ted, really enjoyed visiting with you today. Yeah. And we hope that, I'm sure that all of our library patrons will also enjoy it. Thanks,
Thank
Ted.
You. Thanks for having me.
Ted Ginn, head football coach and lifesaver, Glenville High School.
That's right. Not the candy.